Welcome to our penultimate presentation for Chapter 3. That's a fancy word for second to last. And in this presentation, we're going to take a look at the different types of common stocks. People often think that all stocks are the same. Oh my goodness, no, nothing could be further from the truth. And then we'll end with the computation of market capitalization. In other words, how big is the company? So get out that study guide or however you take your notes, because these types of stocks are just generalizations. Some companies fit neatly into one or more categories. Some companies don't fit neatly into any category. So we're going to see the major categories of companies. And much of this is paraphrased from Peter Lynch's book, One Up on Wall Street, where he talks about the different types of stocks and how you should think about investing in them. So make sure you read One Up on Wall Street eventually. Not right now, relax. Okay. Our first type on slide number 34 are the blue chip stocks. Now, where does the term blue chip come from? It came from the gambling tables, if you can believe that. Because over 100 years ago, 200 years ago, the hoi polloi did not invest in stocks. No, it was only gentlemen. Very rarely, sometimes a woman, but gentlemen. And what gentlemen also did is they went to the gambling tables. And the gambling tables, the blue chips, were the most expensive chips. I don't think that's true anymore. So these are the biggest companies. These are the brand name companies that have been around for decades. So let's read together. Financially strong, high quality stocks with long and stable records of earnings and dividends, often growing their dividends. Now, excuse me, you will sometimes hear people talk about these stocks as value stocks. Well, hang on a minute, because we're going to discuss this term that people use in the industry for value. It attracts conservative investors. Now, this has nothing to do with politics, though, not liberal versus conservative. No, it means investors who do want to invest in the stock market, but are not interested in the next greatest thing that may explode or may implode. So examples of these are companies that you've all heard of: Exxon Mobil, Johnson & Johnson, right? And now many people are including some of the major tech companies that have exploded beyond any wildest valuations and capitalizations. But you know, if you think of the stalwarts, this is what Peter Lynch calls them. He calls them the stalwarts. And the next category are income stocks. Now, sometimes blue chip stocks are income stocks, sometimes not. But income stocks are generally regarded as stocks with long and sustained records of paying higher than average dividends. And again, some people will often refer to these as value stocks. They are normally slow growth companies in mature industries. So the poster children for income stocks are utilities. Are utilities growing quickly? Well, if the area they're in is growing, then the utility has to grow. But generally, no. But do people want to all of a sudden start taking cold showers in the dark? You know, no, they want to cook their food. They want their water to be warm. So utilities are very reliable sources of income. And the banks. For decades, banks have been boring income stocks until they got exciting in the late 90s and the 2000s, and we had the global financial crisis. And we can say with some degree of accuracy that banks have become boring again. Now, every once in a while, there's an issue in the industry, and right now people are worried about commercial loans, commercial real estate loans, because a lot of people have left the office. But still, banks are the backbone of a modern economy. You can't run a modern economy without banks. So they're not going anywhere anytime soon. And they tend to pay pretty good dividends, but not always. Now, slide number 75. Growth stocks are stocks that experience high rates of growth in operations and earnings, growing at 15 to 20% a year. And that might not sound a lot, but if you were growing at 20% a year, in 3 years, you'd be twice as tall as you are now. They're often associated with high price-to-earnings ratios, right? So the more growth there is, the more people are willing to bid up the price relative to the earnings. And usually, they're not paying dividends or maybe a small token amount. Why? Because they need those earnings, those profits, to be reinvested in the company. Now, we expect that the stock price should go up, but it will usually be very volatile. So what are some of the examples? Intel, Dell, HP. Wait a minute. Are Intel, Dell, and HP still growth stocks anymore? You know, 20, 30 years ago, they sure were, right? But not so much anymore. They've become mature companies that are more cyclical. Who are the growth stocks now? You know, the stocks that are on the cover of GQ and Vogue and Vanity Fair. They've got the beautiful teeth and the $200 haircut, and they've worked on their abdomens. And Apple, Google, Microsoft now is another growth stock that has reinvigorated itself from the early days of the personal computer revolution. NVIDIA, the Magnificent Seven, they're calling them now. I hate it when you hear jingoistic terms in the investment world, because it usually ends badly. Not always. So these are the companies that people are talking about. They're always discussed. Will they go up? Will they go down? I like boring old companies, but these are the growth stocks. Now, the next cat. Oh, before we continue, I'm sorry. I meant to remind you of this. Growth versus value. The investment world loves to throw around the terms growth and value. And you're going to hear people discuss, oh, that's a growth stock. Oh, it's a value stock. But the meanings of the terms are not exact. Typically, investors will use growth to designate a high PE stock, while they use value to denote a low PE stock. But wait a minute. That's not the way I think of the word value, and I hope you think of the word value. A high PE stock may be a good value, a great value. A low PE stock might not be a good value. I think of value, I think there's something attractive there, something that piques my interest and might help either grow the capital, meaning the stock price goes up, or pay good dividends or grow the dividends. Here's a perfect example. In January of 2005, Google, which was selling for around $200 with a sky-high PE, I think it was like 68, while the old GM was selling for $34, with a very low PE, I think it was like 5 or 6, and a huge dividend. They were paying very good dividends. Well, at the time, I kept saying, you know, this is not right, GM. You know, they weren't making money off of their cars. They were only making money off the SUVs and the trucks. It's not a good sign. And sure enough, they went through bankruptcy. Google now sells for over $6,000, split adjusted, with a much lower PE, and the old GM stock, which was first named Liquidation Motors, and GM got really upset about that, so they changed it to Motors Liquidation, which kind of sounds silly. It last sold for 4 cents in March of 2011, and that stock is now worthless. So, which one was the better value? You see what I'm trying to coax you into thinking? Just because a stock has a low PE, paying great dividends, doesn't mean it's a great value. Just because a stock has a high PE, not paying any dividends, doesn't mean it's not a great value. So be careful, because you're going to hear people throw out the terms growth and value, and often this, what they're describing, is high PE versus low PE. Price to earnings ratio, Very subtle. We'll discuss it in detail throughout the rest of our journey on stocks together. Slide number 77. Now, This is a category that is often lumped in with growth stocks, but often speculative stocks are not making any money. They're losing money. They haven't made any sales maybe yet. These are companies with a high degree of risk. They are typically losing money or have very low earnings relative to their valuation. They offer the possibility of substantial, some might say astronomic, capital gains, or more likely substantial capital losses. Biotechnology, internet-related stocks in the late 1990s, alternative fuels, marijuana, now artificial intelligence. I don't like that. That's too close to home, artificial intelligence. Anybody want to buy Robinhood, AMC, or GameStop? These were the AMC and GameStop were called meme stocks for a while. Well, before you do, take a look at the history of GoPro, which has a pretty cool little product, don't they? The cameras for people who love adventure, and you can take it under the water and jump out of airplanes with it. And one of my students several years ago was really gung-ho on GoPro. And I would say to him, I said, you know, it's a camera. At its heart, it's a camera. Right now, it's concentrated in what it can do, very specialized in what it can do. But lots of other people are making cameras. How come, you know, Canon and Nikon? How come Apple and Samsung are not selling them? And it turned out that once everybody who owned a GoPro was going to buy a GoPro, a small market, their sales plummeted, and so did the stock. It gives us yet another opportunity to trot out Mr. Benjamin Graham's wonderful definition of what an investment operation is. An investment operation is one which, upon thorough analysis, promises safety of principal and a satisfactory return. Operations not meeting these requirements are speculative. So go ahead and buy a speculative stock. But how about this? For every one speculative stock you buy, buy four boring, blue-chip, income-related stocks, companies that have been around for decades, right? You decide. It's your money. Slide number 78. Now, you're going to hear people say, oh, that's a cyclical company. That's a cyclical stock. What are they talking about? It's round? No, it has nothing. No. No, cyclical stocks are stocks whose earnings and overall market performance are closely tied to the general state of the economy. They follow the business cycle of advances and declines. And the poster child for cyclical companies are automobiles. When the economy is forging ahead, wages are rising, there's plenty of employment, what do people do? They go out and buy a new car. What's wrong with the old car? I want a new car. I like that new car smell. What happens when the economy hits the skids? There's a recession. People are losing their jobs. Yes. So old Bessie in the driveway is doing just fine. Thank you very much. So car companies, when the economy is doing well, they make tons of money. And then when the economy is doing poorly, they lose tons of money. So you can watch it. It can watch it just go up and down with the cycle of the economy. And it turns out that any company that makes stuff like timber, steel, chemicals, and now chips, because everything that you make, everything that is made has a chip in it somewhere, these are cyclical companies. Transportation, leisure, yeah, they follow the business cycle. They're going to do well when the business cycle is doing well and the economy is expanding rapidly. And they're going to do poorly when the reverse is true. On the other side of that coin are defensive stocks. Now, we're not talking about companies that make bullets or tanks or jet fighters. We're talking about companies that tend to hold their own or even do well when the economy starts to falter. What companies would do well? Well, think about it, folks. They are companies that make things that you need no matter what. Do you eat more Cheerios or cornflakes because the economy's doing well? Do you eat less Cheerios or cornflakes because you can, maybe you buy the generic brand, but you still got to eat. Same thing is true with diapers, Procter & Gamble, or soap or toilet paper. Drug companies, somewhat, but they have their own cycles with new drugs and old drugs and the like. So you will hear people say, oh, the economy is starting to falter. Investors are rotating out of cyclical stocks into defensive stocks. You'll hear talk about sector rotation. Now, I'm not personally a big fan of them. I like to hold companies when it makes sense to hold companies and sell them when it doesn't make sense to hold them because you decided that their future prospects are not that great. So what some people will do is the reverse. Those are called contrarians. We'll talk about that strategy in a little bit. When the economy is doing really, really well, they might sell their cyclical stocks and buy more defensive stocks and basically do the opposite of what the crowd is doing. But do you understand the difference between cyclical and defensive? Yeah, I think so. In fact, during 2000 to 2002, the defensive stocks really took it on the chin before the downturn in 1998, 99, 2000. They were considered old economy stocks. But then they actually did well. They went up in 2000 and 2001, 2002, when people realized, yeah, these companies, people are going to continue to eat Cheerios and cornflakes. Now, the next slide has a few of the off the beaten track type stocks, turnaround stocks. These are companies that have fallen on hard times. And what you have to ask yourself as a potential investor, is there a potential for a rebound? I tend to call them goners because they usually, but not always, don't turn around. They're kicked down for a reason. But many people weren't even born. Many of you weren't even born yet. But in the early 80s, Chrysler almost disappeared. Their cars were just suffering from such bad manufacturing and reliability that the company almost went bankrupt. And a gentleman by the name of Lee Iacocca, you could read his autobiography. He's a very, I could read plenty of stuff about him. He was the gentleman who actually was the project manager who brought the Ford Mustang in the 60s to fruition. And there's a car that's still in production, very popular car. And then he took over Chrysler at its nadir, at the depths of when it was about to go bankrupt, and turned it around. So the stock went from about 40-something, 47, 48, down to under $3. And then he turned it around and went back up into the 40s. AMC now, they really, really took it on the chin with the COVID pandemic because you couldn't go to the movie theater. And then it turned into what some people call the meme stocks, where they were just trading it. But the AMC is trying to come back, and we'll see. We'll see. A lot of people have been predicting the demise of movie theaters for decades, since VHS cassette tapes came out. And, they seem to be holding their own. I don't follow them that much. I don't typically go and sit in the dark and watch a flickering light like a lot of people do. But that's up to you. You might love movies. You might love the movie industry. And so do research AMC and see if they're going to come out of the funk that they've been in. The next category are asset play stocks. These are companies that are sitting on an asset that could be sold or spun off. For example, JCPenney's, a venerable company, started, in 1903 or something like that. They owned an insurance division that was very profitable. They sell you insurance that you don't need and people buy it. So the department stores, the mid-sized department stores, many of them are gone, like Montgomery Ward's and who else is, there's tons of them that have disappeared. And the ones that are remaining are really having a tough time because they're getting hit from the bottom by the Targets and the Walmarts of the world. And they're getting hit from the top by the boutique stores. But JCPenney's is still in business, and they were able to sell that profitable insurance division to keep the company afloat. Here's another example, a wonderful example of an asset play. Who owns Frito-Lay? I'll let you figure it out. In fact, I'm pretty sure, I haven't checked lately, but I'm pretty sure the company that owns Frito-Lay makes more money off of Frito-Lay than they do off their signature product. And they used to own, Kentucky Fried Rat, Pizza Crap, and Taco Smell. I'm sorry, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, and Taco Smell. So look at that. Because asset plays, you have to do a little bit of digging. You have to go look under the hood and see what assets are on the books of the company. And then penny stocks. Folks, stay away. Don't get... We've already talked about how, well, if you've listened to the discussion of bid versus ask, and then looked at the casas de cambio, you're on the wrong side of the tracks. You're in the bad side of town, the red light district. It just stay away from these companies. They're not real companies. They are scam artists. And so there are many examples in Canvas and on the class website. So check them out. Somebody wants to sell you a stock that's only selling for 7 cents. Just stay away. And those, where are they? Right. They're on the pink sheets, now called the OTC markets, and the bulletin board, OTC bulletin board. Lastly are foreign stocks, called international stocks, also called overseas. Traditionally, they were difficult to transact, difficult to purchase, difficult to sell. But now there are many brokerage firms that have international accounts. What does that mean? It means you place dollars into these international accounts, but then you can move your dollars to other currencies, to Mexican pesos, to European euros, to Japanese yen, and you can buy and sell the stocks on the exchange in Tokyo or Mexico City or Frankfurt or London. So, and many people do that. In fact, the brokerage firm that I'm associated with, that's their bread and butter. Most of the brokers are either of Mexican, one guy's from Spain, and the president is actually from San Diego, but he lived and worked in Mexico City for many years. So they started that several years ago, but now the big boys and girls are doing it too. But for those of you who don't want to move your dollars to other currencies, you can find companies that are American Depository Receipts, ADRs. You'll also see GDRs and DRs, Depository Receipts. Now, what's going on here? I think I made mention of it in the discussion in the presentation of how to look up stocks on the internet. For Sony, Sony is based in Japan, right? You want to buy Sony? You could change your paid dollars into yen and use one of these international accounts and buy it on the Tokyo exchange. Or what somebody in New York typically has done, a bank or a trust company, they've gone over to Japan and bought a ton of Sony or Toyota or Honda and brought it to New York and then reissued it dollar denominated. And so you don't have to worry about moving your dollars to yen or pesos or euros or whatever. So that's very cool. Now, I wish some companies like Nestle would do that, but it hasn't done yet. And of course, many of us will use global and international mutual funds. Why? Because the mutual fund companies just have, you know, tremendous resources. They have people based all around the world, knocking on doors of companies all around the world, speaking many different languages from many different cultures. So for the vast majority of us, unless we stick with big companies like Toyota, it's not a good thing to do, in my humble opinion. And the currency issues. When you move your dollars to another currency, you have to be aware of the currency issues. Now, They shouldn't be, in my humble opinion, the tail that wags the dog. But it's an inverse relationship. If you have a stronger U.S. dollar, that has a negative impact on your investments overseas. Huh? Right, because now you need more of that currency to buy back the dollars. But if the dollar goes weaker, that has a positive impact. And some of you have relatives in Mexico, you visited Mexico, so you know, you've experienced this. When the dollar's strong, you go over to Mexico and, oh boy, you can buy a whole lot more for your money. When the dollar's weak, it's the exact opposite. But think about it. If you had purchased that house or whatever in Mexico and the dollar gets stronger, now you need more pesos to buy back your dollars. And the opposite is true. If the dollar goes weaker, now more pesos will buy more dollars. So it's an inverse relationship. And so we have to think about those. In my humble opinion, the dollar has been too strong for too long, and I'm expecting it to moderate. I don't want to use the word crash. Some people are using the word crash when they talk about the BRICS, and that's a whole other issue. We don't want to get into it, but when we talk about people wanting to de-dollarization the world, all I can say is it's about time. After World War II, we were the only people standing after World War II, and we had to rebuild also. So it made sense for the dollar to be the world's currency reserved. But that was 70, 80 years ago, folks. Many other economies are much stronger. Their currencies are more stable. So it makes sense for us to share the duties of having a currency that is accepted all around the world. I think so. I think it ultimately is best for us, too. It's just a strong currency is a blessing and a curse. It will make our companies more competitive. It'll make us more competitive as workers. It will cause some disruption. That combination ice crusher and MP3 player that you can get at Walmart for $29.95 might be $59.95 or $89.95. But do you really need a combination ice crusher MP3 player? Think about it, folks. Slide 81. Okay, so we're going to turn our attention now to market capitalization. So time to stretch and pause if you need to. Because market capitalization is the most important number when we think about price. Many people will concentrate on the price. It's $80. You think it'll go up to $90? Forget about the price. Until you get into the penny stock world, what's more important is the market capitalization. It's a very simple calculation that we'll do once or twice, all semester long, because all you do is look it up. There are three major categories: large cap, mid cap, and small cap. Do you remember these from mutual funds? Right. The papa bears, the mama bears, and the baby bears. Now, it used to be, just for a few decades, that $10 billion and up was large cap. Now you're hearing people say, oh, it needs to be at least $15 billion. Whatever. I'll use 10, 2, and under 2. I'll use the ones that are highlighted, and the smaller ones you can use if you want. The ones that are in lower font, or smaller fonts, you could use. Once you get above $100 billion, folks, you're in what's called the mega cap subcategory of large cap. So either one. If you want to say large cap, say large cap. If you want to say mega cap for the big companies, the Apples of the world, the Googles, the Walmarts, the ExxonMobils and the like, go right ahead. It's up to you. But I'll take either. I mean, they're both right. Mid caps used to be around $2 to $10 billion. Now you're hearing people say, no, it's mid cap. It's got to be at least 5 or 6, up to $15 billion. So either one is up to you. Either one is up to you. And then small caps used to be around $100 million to $2 billion. Now you're hearing people say, oh, your small caps are up to $5 or $6 billion. So again, it's up to you. Now, there's a subcategory of small cap called micro cap. And that was, under $100 million. But now you're hearing people say, oh, up to $400 or $500 million for a micro cap. So It's fluid. It's squishy. And so you decide. But these are the ones that we'll use. I'll use. You can use your others. I'll take them. I'll take them, definitely. I won't say they're wrong. It's just there's a difference of opinion. Now, as we've said, there are certain stocks that shouldn't be mentioned in polite company, and those are the penny stocks. The industry will say that anything between $1 and $5 a share is a penny stock. I tend to get people, I want people to concentrate on the ones that are selling for 0.07 cents or 3 cents or whatever, because those are the real scam artists. Some companies that are under $5 a share, they might just be a hit on hard times. It doesn't mean we should invest in them, but they are going concerns, or maybe not so going concerns, but they're not trying to scam you. They're trying to make a go of it and maybe not succeeding and maybe failing. So, but just realize it's kind of like when you say art, I know it when I see it. Well, it's the same thing as penny stocks, they're scams. I know it when I see it, and hopefully you will know it when you see it. You'll see a company that used to be making mattresses or something like that, and now they're making marijuana or selling marijuana or whatever it is. Just stay away from them. So here's an example. The stock is $20, the price. Is it a large cap, mid cap, small cap? We don't know. We don't know until we know how many shares are outstanding, are being traded. And in this case, there's 5 million shares. So if you take 20 times 5 million, you get 100 million. And there's a worksheet that we want you to go through, worksheet number 3, that does a few of these calculations. They're very straightforward. 100 million, right, this is a small cap stock. Some people might say it's a micro cap stock. So either one is fine. Now, is it a mid cap or a large cap? No. So that would not be correct. And no, $100 million sounds like a lot. It is to you and me. That's a lot of money. But in the world of publicly traded companies, this is a very small company. And read, the stock price for the most part, until you get down to 7 cents, is irrelevant. You must look at the market cap to see the value of the company. Remember Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway? The price is not important. It's the valuation, the capitalization. Okay, so now we've taken a look at various market statistics. Earnings per share, price to earnings ratio, book value, dividends per share, dividend yield, and market capitalization. Let's take a look at some companies that are competitors to one another. Walmart, Costco, and Target. Now, if you just looked at the prices, you would say, wait a minute, Costco is bigger than Walmart? Now, you kind of know that intuitively, I mean, Costco is pretty big, but are they as big as Walmart? No, especially when you hear on the news, or the Walmart, the world's largest retailer, right? Just because the price is much less doesn't mean that the company is worth less. We need to know how many shares are outstanding. So we look at the earnings per share, and we see that Walmart made $6 last year, Costco $14.66, and Target $7.86. So when we see the price to earnings ratio, we see that Walmart is a pretty healthy at 28.3, whereas Costco is pretty high at 48.6, and Target is much lower. So just looking at the PE, knowing nothing else, we can say that investors are more enamored, more excited about the prospects of Costco vis-a-vis Walmart, and certainly versus Target. Now, are they right? That's right. That's where judgment comes in. And we'll know in 2 to 3 to 4 years when the future is revealed. That's part of investing. Look at the book values. They are far less than the prices. Right. That makes sense. I mean, is anybody going, first of all, no one's going to buy. Maybe somebody could swallow Target, but no one's going to buy Walmart or Costco. And it makes sense that the book value would be far less because think about it. What is Walmart really worth? I mean, they got all that inventory and they don't even own the buildings, most of them. Some of them they do, but they lease those out in 50-year leases. If you sold all the stuff that Walmart owned, you really wouldn't have that much to sell. So what the investors are saying is that we believe the companies are worth far more intact and as companies going concerns, as the IRS calls them, than if you just tried to liquidate the companies, sell off all the assets. And that's a good thing, right? That means they're all healthy. Dividends are $2.28 for Walmart, $4.08 for Costco, and $4.40 for Target. So dividing the dividend yield by the price of dividends per share by the price gives us the dividend yield. And so it turns out that the least exciting, the one that investors are least excited about, Target, is paying us more on a percentage basis in dividends, a little over 3%. Walmart's paying half of that, 1.35%, and Costco's paying, again, half of what Walmart's paying. Again, this is telling us that investors are far more excited about the prospects for Costco than they are for Walmart. And then, of course, Target is at the bottom of the heap here. But here's the kicker right here. What is Walmart worth? $458 billion. So if you wanted to buy Walmart, if you wanted to own that company, you'd have to have $458 billion in your pocket, walk on down to the New York Stock Exchange, and it doesn't actually work that way, but that's the idea. And Costco is not far behind at $316 billion, are they? So investors are really excited and thinking that maybe Costco might eclipse Walmart. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but both companies are aggressively moving internationally. Both companies want to move. I don't know if you've been to Mexico and seen the Costco there. Sometimes I have friends who are really frightened of Mexico, and I say, oh, I'll take you to Tijuana. I'll take you to the most dangerous part, but don't worry, we'll go there in the daytime. I speak Spanish. Don't worry about it. And you cross the border, and 30 seconds later, there's a Costco. This is a Costco. I say, yeah. You want to go see the Walmart? You want to see the Home Depot? How about the Applebee's? Right? And a cute story, Amazon, they both start with the letter A. Amazon was courting a major online retailer in India, and they were thinking about buying them. Over the weekend, Walmart snuck in and bought the company, made some kind of backroom deal. You see how we didn't even include Amazon here, did we? Okay. Whereas Target has stayed in the United States, they made a move into Canada. Now, you would think they would have done a pretty good job. They're based in Minneapolis, right? They're based up by the border with Canada, and yet they failed miserably. They had to leave with their tails between their legs. So Target is very profitable, folks, but investors are not that excited about their prospects. That doesn't mean we shouldn't invest in them, because 3% is not bad. And if they're growing their income, they're growing their dividends, that's a good sign, in my humble opinion. And now let's take a look at a few other companies you may have heard of. AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile. Look at the price of AT&T. You think, boy, that's really small. Verizon, $42, $17, almost $18 for AT&T, $42 for Verizon, and T-Mobile, $162? Well, again, we don't know what their market capitalization is until we know how many shares are outstanding, so we'll take a look at that in a little bit. Earnings per share, they're all making money, $1.97, $2.76, and $6.92. But look at the relative PEs. AT&T is 9, which is, in today's world, pretty darn low. Verizon is 15, which is about maybe a little lower than average, but T-Mobile has the highest PE at 23. So just looking at the price-to-earnings ratios, who is the most, which company are the investors most excited about? T-Mobile, with Verizon being a distant second, and then AT&T being a very, very distant third. And now look at the book values. AT&T's market price is almost $18, but its book value is $14.50. So in other words, their market price is getting close to what the accountants say AT&T is worth on the books. If that market price were to fall a lot lower, AT&T might be worth more liquidated than in as a going concern, as a business in operation. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's kind of scary for for AT&T. Verizon is a whole lot more, 42 versus 22, but still nothing like what we saw with the retailers, is it? No. And T-Mobile is even more, about three times more, with $54. So again, no one's going to try to liquidate Verizon or T-Mobile, but who knows what might happen with AT&T. Now, the dividends per share for AT&T are $1.11, $2.66 for Verizon, and $1.30 for T-Mobile. Look at those dividend yields for AT&T and Verizon, over 6%, more than what bonds are paying, whereas T-Mobile is only 0.8%. So if you're buying stocks for dividends, would you be buying T-Mobile for dividends? Well, it depends on how fast they're growing their dividend. We'll learn about that more when we get into chapter 4. But most people would say, wow, I'd be happy with a 6% dividend. But what are investors saying about the prospects for AT&T and Verizon? It's a tough business, folks. Everybody has a cell phone already. Right? They have to now compete against one another and punch each other in the face until somebody's left standing. And investors are more excited about the prospects future for T-Mobile eating away at the, I think, I'm not sure, you have to ask them, eating away at the base of AT&T and Verizon. But now look at the market cap. If you had looked at this a few years ago, AT&T was close to $200 billion. Verizon was close to $200 billion. So AT&T has fallen quite a bit. Verizon's fallen a little bit. But investors have bid up the price of T-Mobile such that it is worth more than AT&T and Verizon. I don't know if that's a wise thing. I don't invest in any of these companies. I usually don't tell you which companies I invest in. My apologies. I shouldn't have said that. But I wouldn't, only because of the industry they're in. It's such a difficult business. As we said, everybody already has their cell phone, and every few years they have to spend several billion dollars to upgrade to the next technology. And of course, people don't want to spend more. they don't want to have to spend more because they've gone from fourth generation to fifth generation, then fifth to sixth generation. So it's a very, very difficult business for the carriers. Yeah. If you're interested in wireless, you contact me and tell me what you think about these three companies, okay? I should have kept my mouth shut. My apologies. But that dividend sure is attractive. Oh boy, if you could, and I've read quite a bit, actually, to be truthful, AT&T's dividend, many people in the media are thinking that it's not that stable. They might have to cut their dividend. And of course, we're going to learn about the value line in a little bit in chapter 4. Excuse me. Verizon's dividend is more, they believe, more predictable. Yeah, so you do your research. Do your research and wait till we get to the value line, and then we'll read what the value line says. So remind me, let's take a look what the value line says about AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, okay, in chapter 4. All right, well done. Go back over, make sure you've sketched out those major categories of stocks and do the worksheet number 3, do some calculations, and calculate some market capitalizations, and realize that all we do is we go look it up on the internet. All right. Oh boy, we're in the home stretch here for chapter 3, folks. In our last presentation, our next presentation, our last presentation, we'll discuss investing strategies. I think I've already tipped my hat. I'm a buy and hold kind of guy. But there are other strategies out there that you need to be aware of, if only to help people stay far away from them. See you in our next and last presentation for Chapter 3, Introduction to Stocks. Dear students, we are so proud of you. Think of how much you have learned. Reflect and be awesome.